morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Thursday, April 2nd, 2009. And this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
This Saturday, Portlanders have another chance to resist the call to sprawl.
One person has died during the G20 summit protests in London.
And Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez has offered asylum to detainees released from the Guantanamo Torture Center.
Portland area weather, showers this morning, a chance of shower thunderstorms this afternoon, highs close to 50, then tonight rain decreasing after midnight, lows around 40. Tomorrow still wet, but looking better for the weekend.
And first we go to regional headlines from around Cascadia. Yesterday, activist and organizer Joe Bro indulged in a satirist's view from the bridge. Joe's back with us this morning to talk about the serious topic of growth, sprawl, and Oregon's future. Welcome, Joe.
Hey, great to talk to you, Chris. I'm Joe Kermaski, though. We had a mix-up on the name during the April Fool's joke. So it's Joe Kermaski is my actual, not non-deplume, but... given name, so I'm not trying to hide behind any other names for the organizing a rally. So
why is it I know that and still wrote it on my piece of paper here?
No worries.
Well, first off, the I-5 crossing is being sold as a solution to traffic problems. How do proponents justify traffic as a reason to compromise the environment?
You were going in and out on that. I think you asked me about the reasons for the rally. Is that correct, Chris?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, we're hosting an opposition and alternatives to the size and scope of the bridge that's been proposed right now. And I think we're looking at a number of livability issues. We're looking at trying to look into the future here, and it doesn't just appear 10 years down the road, the future, whole and just drops out of space. It's future is sort of what we get from collective decisions that we make every day, and I think we have to decide as a region if we want to continue driving single occupancy vehicles, not really making an effort to carpool or toll those bridges, or look at how we can really save our money and invest in all of our transportation needs around the state. And so $4 billion just seems like an awful lot of money to waste. We can do it cheaper, and we can do it with a lot less environmental impact. And so those are our reasons for stepping out here. We want to cut back on sprawl into the region, and also avoid the idea of opening up the discussion for widening I-5 through Portland. I don't know about anybody else, but a lot of folks I talk to in this area don't want us to become another Atlanta or Houston or L.A. in terms of traffic right through through our city.
Bottom line, though, who stands to make money on this? It seems like it's whenever there's a really bad idea that's about to be embraced, someone's making money somewhere.
Well, you got to follow the money, and I'm not when I use the word consensus for this 12 lane, I think that there's a lot of politicking going on. There's a lot of consensus among the people that want to build the bridge and the people that are going to benefited from it in developing communities farther out from the bridge, from the being able to take people to live farther away from their jobs and whatnot. So specifically who the money is, I can't imagine that that it's a bunch of nonprofits or local folks that are looking to gain a lot of revenue from this.
So what's happening actually, just to wrap up here, on Saturday there is an action against the I-5 crossing.
Sunday at noon, it's a rally, and it's the opening salvo, sort of the kickoff of a long, hopefully not too long, but long as it takes, campaign to look at alternatives and really stop this 12-lane mega bridge in its tracks and look at how we can retrofit and light rail this this area and carpool like we mean it and really start. We don't want to not solve the congestion problems. We just think there's a better way and a cheaper way to do it. And so it's noon on Sunday, the rally at Waterfront Park near the Morrison Bridge. We have Bill Bradbury speaking, Amanda Fritz, Robert Liberty. We have statements being read from Washington senators and other representatives down in Salem. We have speakers from some of the universities, some of the student groups. We have folks from the CLF and the Thousand Friends of Oregon. And we have folks from the Third Bridge group in Vancouver who have a different agenda of how they think the alternative should look, but they are opposed to this as well. So it's a real democracy moment, I think, down there. And ride, bike, take the MAX, get there any way you can, but please come out and show that the community is opposed to a mega bridge and unchecked sprawl through our community.
Thank you so much for that. That, of course, is Joe Chinaski, activist and organizer. Thanks for being with us today, Joe.
Thanks, Chris.
Woodland owners face pressure from development and dropping timber values, but they're still looking for ways to make money. One way to do that, carbon offsets. This week, the U.S. House introduced a climate change bill that includes a cap-and-trade provision. The system would mean those emitting large amounts of carbon dioxide, such as coal-fired power plants, would need to reduce their emissions by improving facilities or purchase offsets. Offsets allow polluters to emit carbon as long as they pay for a project to reduce emissions elsewhere.
Jefferson County commissioners voted unanimously yesterday to sue the state over its intention to curtail development in the Batolius River Basin. The county alleges the state violated several tenets of Oregon land use law this winter as it hurriedly completed plans to make the Batolius Basin an area of critical statewide concern. That is a never-before-used designation that will severely restrict development on 22% of Jefferson County's land. The designation would put an end to plans by two developers to create large destination resorts in the basin.
The National Audubon Society and the Natural Resources Defense Council have created Google Earth maps of 13 western states that they hope will help to steer energy development away from sensitive areas. The maps include different layers of development constraints, such as legally restricted lands or wildlife habitat areas.
Officials from the U.S. Justice Department have requested that Alaska Senator Ted Stevens' conviction for corruption should be overturned. Officials say that mistakes made by prosecutors during his trial render the conviction invalid.
The Oregon Court of Appeals has upheld a contempt ruling against Bill Sizemore. A judge had ruled that Sizemore willfully violated an injunction barring him from running any charity that receives political donations. The appeals court upheld the injunction yesterday, along with an award of attorney's fees to the Oregon Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers Oregon, the teachers' unions that won a $2.5 million jury award against him in 2002.
Well, the economy is in the pits. Employers are shedding jobs. The great American middle class is in full-blown rout. But the Public Board of Safe Corporation punted on whether to grant its chief executive a fat raise this year. Brenda Rockland will receive $290,000 in base salary to manage the state-owned Workers' Compensation Insurance Company. Oh, the irony.
A state report issued this week projects that Measure 57, the crime sentencing measure approved by voters in November, will add 1,600 inmates to Oregon's prison population by 2013. The state's prison population was expected to grow at an annual rate of 2-3%, but with Measure 57, growth is expected to exceed 5% through mid-2011. Well, that's a way we can deal with unemployment.
On Tuesday, March 17th of this year, the Rhizome Collective in Austin, Texas, including both individuals and organizations that have called 300 Allen Street their home, was barred from the building due to a mandate of eviction from the city of Austin. The cascade of events that ensued is just staggering. Rhizome is home to so many different organizations. Joining us this morning is Rhizome spokesperson Adam Thompson to talk about where the collective stands right now and where it's headed. Good morning, Adam. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Talk a little bit, if you will, about what happened to the collective on March 17th.
Well, it was a series of events that unfortunately were a little too fast for us to be able to deal with. Originally, this sort of stemmed from the fact that the warehouse space that we used at 300 Allen Street was privately owned by, you know, Scott Kellogg. And last year there was an attempt by the collective to buy that warehouse, but that sort of petered out. A month or so ago, Scott asked the collective to make an offer to purchase the warehouse within 6 months, and we started working towards making that happen with preliminary talks about price and looking into financing and that sort of stuff. And then about 2 weeks after that, when we were just barely getting started on that, the City of Austin code enforcement came by, as they do several times a year, to inspect the warehouse on false reports of 40 or more people living there. And unlike previous inspections where just a cursory inspection of the living spaces had been made, the inspector examined the space very thoroughly and informed us that they were deeming it unsafe to inhabit and that everyone had to get out within 2 weeks.
Seems rather harsh. How many organizations actually housed at RISO in the building?
Well, there was a community radio, web radio project. There was Inside Books Project, which is Texas's only Books to Prisoners project, Bikes Across Borders, the Center for Urban Sustainability, the permaculture project there, and Food Not Bombs also used that space.
Adam, what is Rhizome's position right now? Where are these groups going, and how will the various organizations continue on?
Well, all of the organizations that were housed in that space were able to find a new temporary operating space, with the exception of the Inside Books Project, who currently they just have everything in storage and they're trying to find a new space still. All of the people who live there, all the residents, have you know, found temporary housing elsewhere. But the collective itself, you know, continues to operate. We've, you know, continued to meet, and we still have, you know, ownership and use of the Grove Brownfield, which we, if you don't know, that was
it's a permaculture project, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a landfill.
Adam, at this point, that's all we have time for, but thank you so much for that. My guest has been Adam Thompson, spokesperson for the Rhizome Collective in Austin, Texas. Thank you so much for that, Adam.
A man at the G20 protests in London collapsed and died today. He collapsed during a demonstration near the Bank of England before being found by police. The man was taken to hospital by the London Ambulance Service and was there pronounced dead. Police said a number of missiles believed to be bottles were thrown at them while they attended to the man.
Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez has said that he is prepared to receive detainees held by the U.S. military at Guantanamo Bay Camp in Cuba. President Barack Obama has ordered the closure of the controversial camp, in which right now about 240 inmates are being held. Chavez made his offer at a summit of South American and Arab countries.
A federal judge says prisoners being held at a military air base in Afghanistan have a right to challenge their detention in a U.S. court. U.S. District Judge John Bates rejected the United States' motion to deny the right to three foreign detainees at Bagram Airfield in Afghanistan.
Well, world stocks went nuts today as leaders of the world's top richest and developing countries announced in London a lot of measures, a raft of measures, to deal with the economic crisis. There has been $1 trillion pumped into the system to restore credit. Joining us this morning, of course, is KBOO's reporter Spencer Raymond to talk about what the implications are. Good morning, Spencer. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Chris. Good morning. Yeah, you mentioned it. $1 trillion with a T, about half of that, $500 billion, will go right towards the International Monetary Fund. The other half will go to other IMF agencies and other types of financial institutions that can help get the global economy back on track. A couple of days ago, Chris, a lot of people did not expect any sort of consensus to come out of these meetings, but I guess Gordon Brown, who, again, is hosting the G20, was able to get something going. Angela Merkel from Germany and Nicolas Sarkozy of France, they're on board now because there are new monitoring restrictions in place. The financial oversight that has been talked about for a long time, they got what they wanted, is what it sounds like coming out of this meeting. Specifically, a relationship between executive performance and salary. We haven't talked about that too much, but in this new plan, it sounds like a lot of these leaders don't want these big bonuses just being handed out willy-nilly. They want a clear connection between the performance of the executive and their company and how much money they'll actually earn. One important thing to note here, Chris, is that China has played a much bigger role, probably the biggest it's ever played in G20 negotiations. A lot of this money will be coming from China, and they will play a big role. And this is all in an effort to increase China's stance in the IMF, something that Hu Jintao and the Chinese have been very upset with over the past, saying that the IMF and the G20 and the World Bank are led by the Western countries.
Well, Spencer, that's all we've got time for, but thank you so much for that. That, of course, is KBOO Spencer Raymond joining us with DC Dirt, as he does every weekday morning. Thanks so much, Spencer.
Israeli police interrogated Avigdor Lieberman for more than 7 hours today at the headquarters of the National Fraud Squad on allegations of receiving bribes, money laundering, and breach of trust. This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Thursday, April 2nd, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Emily Young. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next, Flashpoints, a report from the G20, Catherine Austin Fitz on the economy, and a report on the new right-wing government in Israel.
Thanks for listening, and have a good day.